fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Delicate, fragile, colorful, dynamic, and free. No other creatures on Earth evoke as many reactions and as many heartfelt emotions as do birds. Whether it was the dream of Icarus who fastened wings with wax to soar in the air, the foreboding silhouette of a black raven against a November sky, the fierce, determined visage of the eagle, our national symbol, or the pretty, diminutive, yellow songbird of tropical breezes and fleeting romance. Birds are a big part of our history, our culture, and our natural world. They can also be, like the canary in a coal mine, a herald, a warning, for when things in the natural world are out of balance and not right. I'm Glenn Moberg. For 40 years, the Woodson Art Museum's annual Birds in Art exhibit has attracted artists and art lovers from around the world to the unlikely destination of Wausau, Wisconsin, to view what is arguably the greatest sustained collection of avian art in the globe. Its artists not only love their subjects, they love the natural world that sustains them. And today on Route 51, we'll hear from six of those artists featured at this year's exhibit, including sculptor Walter Matayam, who joins us by phone from his studio in Maryland. Here in our studio in Wausau, we welcome back to our airwaves Woodson Art Museum Director Kathy Kelsey Foley. And we extend a welcome to you. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call us at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. And for those of you who are wondering, we were just listening to Chet Atkins doing Yellow Bird. Walter Matayam, thanks so much for making an hour available to us this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome, Glenn.
And Kathy, thank you once again for being with us. Birds in Art is now officially older than the late Jack Benny, who was famously always 39 years old.
That's right. And, oh, Glenn, to be 40 again. I would love to be 40 again.
Me too.
We are just so delighted and tickled to have the 2015 Birds in Art exhibition up and running. We celebrated its opening this weekend in fabulous style with 74 of the 122 artists with us for the weekend. A great time.
What's so special about reaching this milestone?
Well, you know, in museum terms, in the big world of museums, 40 is relatively young. The Boston Museum of Fine Arts is going to be celebrating its sesquicentennial, 150 years, next year. I think what's the reason it's an important milestone here was brought home to me on Sunday morning when we welcomed the 50th reunion class of Wausau High School. And these are now obviously adults who graduated from high school before our community, before our region, had an art museum.
Right.
Today, I hope not take for granted, but we benefit from all the programming and opportunities that an art museum presents a community.
Well, tell us what's special about the works that are on display at this exhibit. I talked to one artist in particular, and we'll hear from him later in the show, who said there's a freshness, a spontaneity, sort of an additional excitement associated with the artwork on display this year.
Remember, and I'm an art historian by training. I don't make art, but I do think, and Walt could comment on this, that because of the reputation that the artists have really created by putting their best work forward, artists really do vie for a place in this exhibition. So you put your best work forward, or you don't enter the exhibition. Who's that, Walter?
That's That would be the guard dogs.
So when everyone is collectively putting forth their best work and we're only selecting by jury this year 102 artists' work.
Right.
That means it's cream of the crop doesn't even do it justice. It's even above the cream.
Walter Mattia, have we taken care of the dogs? You still with us?
Yeah, we've taken care of the dogs, though not as I would have them taken care of at the moment. No, listen, you know, you actually talked about two different things earlier on. You said, you know, what's so special about 40? And in fact, you know, what's so special about 40 is that it's not just that it's 40, but that they started out with a real goal 40 years ago to identify what was the best in birds in art or birds as art. And they've just kind of driven that agenda year after year after year. And over 40 years, if you were to go back, and as a number of us did this year, and went and looked at the catalogs from this show, you really saw that, you know, this small institution, this small museum in Wisconsin, has sort of set the standard for, you know, a huge art form.
And it's constantly changing.
It's powerful to be a part of it. It's wonderful.
Walter Mattia, you were named Master Wildlife Artist by the Woodson Art Museum in 2007. How long have you been contributing to the Birds and Art Show?
I think the first year I did this was 1985. So it's been 30 years. Now, I didn't get in every year, which is another strength of the show. You know, every year you submit a couple of pieces and in effect a jury that is selected each year from a different group of people with different expertise goes through these thousands of entries and picks your pieces. So that there's a wonderful honesty to the show. I mean, if you get in, you did something. You really accomplished something. And once you're in, you're kind of desperate to get back.
That's sort of the good news and the bad news, isn't it?
Yeah.
Walter, tell us a little bit about your work and your studio in Maryland.
You mean other than the dogs?
Well, I know that you do sculptures of hunting dogs. You do more than just avian subjects.
I happen to love birds, and they for me are just sort of a wonderful way of exploring all kinds of artistic problems, be they compositional problems, be they situational problems. You know, I mean, we're artists. You know, we're not bird artists, we're not wildlife artists, we're just artists. And all of us sort of are exploring sort of the same different artistic problems. I just find, you know, using birds as a wonderful tool, wonderful metaphor for a whole lot of things that I'm interested in. But, you know, I would love to say that my studio is this beautiful thing overlooking a lake and, you know, surrounded by gorgeous stuff. But in fact, it's a warehouse full of the stuff that sculptors surround their worlds with, you know, from crates to boxes to wax all over the floors. And, you know, it's not what you think of as sort of the atelier of a fine artist. It's more a working shop.
Well, your contribution this year is a sculpture in bronze of two lesser prairie chickens, and it's entitled Where the Buffalo Roamed. And you write, and I'm going to quote you here, "The Great Plains are blessed with three species of prairie grouse, sage grouse, sharptails, and prairie chickens, no less iconic than the pronghorn, elk, and bison that roam the range. The past and future of these birds are part of the continuing challenges we face in conserving the natural heritage of the West."
Not sure what else I'd add to that. I mean, basically, you know, all North America, all wildlife everywhere, you know, we're part of it. We're no longer we no longer can sort of sit back and let things take their course if we want these things to be around and with us. And you know, for so many of the species that a lot of the people depict in these shows, there is, in some ways, this underlying current of our representations of some of these things, maybe some of the last best images of what we're ever going to see of these things.
You know, we have a.
You know, there is a bit of a warning involved in this, but I think mostly people get into this because they see something beautiful and they work with it.
But then, you know, if they see something beautiful, maybe it will inspire them to go out and see the same thing in the wild, and that could generate an interest in wildlife conservation and habitat preservation.
It does. In this country in particular, and I don't know if this is as true in Europe. I'm just not so sure, but you know, the government in the 1800s sent Thomas Moran, the great landscape painter, out to Yellowstone and down into the canyon country, and he came back with, you know, amazing paintings that were, in a funny way, propaganda to get people to go west. So, I mean, art has been used.
Well, exactly.
Forever, to promote things.
I mean, think about even the great French Delacroix and Liberty Leading the People. I mean, there's art has been used to rally, but and I think different different viewers take away different messages. Just last year, we used the artwork of a variety of artists to raise awareness about the passenger pigeons' extinction. So that's just one element.
Well, one of the guys who painted passenger pigeons was Audubon. You have a number of Audubon pieces that you featured at the Woodson Museum. Not a tremendous number of them, but you have some in your collection.
Well, we are more than blessed and fortunate, Glenn, to have both an Audubon painting, an oil painting, and a watercolor. Most of his watercolors reside at Harvard and at the New York Historical Society, and he actually painted very few oil paintings, not portraits. So.
And Audubon, of course, popularized these birds in a lot of ways. People would see the prints and realize our natural heritage. But, Walter, you were telling me that an even more influential artist, a more practical artist, was Roger Torrey Peterson.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to realize, yes, I mean, basically that's true. The Audubon prints were actually seen by very few people. I mean, they were very expensive, and they were done in very small editions in portfolios that were sold to private collectors. So as influential as he is today,
that's correct.
At the time he was doing these things, there really wasn't that big it didn't have that big an impact.
So Walter,
the guys that did have an impact, though, which was we talked briefly about, you know, this confluence of in sort of in the 1960s with the advent of Earth Day and the beginning of the modern environmental movement, and it was really that the early guidebooks of Roger Torrey Peterson and the Golden guidebooks with Singer's work that gave gave all of us a tool to actually look at birds and know what they were.
And you know, my dad,
that was so powerful.
My dad was
a name on something.
My dad was a bird watcher, and he had a dog-eared copy of Roger Torrey Peterson's Birds of North America that dated back, I think, to the late 30s or early 40s.
Yeah.
And I had one of those little golden book guides that I still use.
And, of course, Roger, Torrey Peterson, Arthur Singer, Don Eckelberry, all important guidebook contributors, brilliant, were all honored by the Woodson Art Museum as master artists. In conversations like this, I always like to reference the New York Times on the occasion of Roger Torrey Peterson's 80th birthday. They editorialized under the heading "Happy Birds Day, Roger," and they credited Roger with introducing more birds to more people and more people to more birds than any other artist or writer.
And Walter, on the subject of your work, showing the prairie chickens, we've got a prairie chicken festival every year in central Wisconsin at the Mead Wildlife Area and the Buena Vista Grasslands. One year, I actually had a chance to sit in the blinds of the booming grounds. It was a cold spring morning. It was before 4 a.m. that we had to get out there. And then to watch the prairie chickens come in out of the fog and do their mating rituals up close, it's something I'll never forget. There was something prehistoric about it.
Glenn, you know, I've been out in Nebraska and seen the cranes come in down at Grand Island, and I've gone down to Bosque del Apache in New Mexico to see the cranes come in, and it is a wonder. I mean, it's cold. It's a brutally cold wonder, but all of those birds. I mean, in Wisconsin, there's a long, long, long tradition of people thinking about the prairie chickens. I think it was Mrs. Haberstam.
That's
right.
I think
that's the name that's right.
Right, that is. Exactly
it
that.
Was Hammerstam? Or,
yes.
But people have been thinking about making sure that the prairie chickens were around for, you know, 50, 60 years, and they put a lot of time into it. But it is, in fact, a migratory grouse. It's not like a rough grouse that, you know, any 300 or 400 acres will probably save a rough grouse. Prairie chickens, it's a big deal as to the different habitats they need, and the state of Wisconsin has done a great job.
I want to get into playing some of these interviews with these wildlife artists, but before we do that, Walter, I do want to mention to our listeners that you're on the board of directors of the American Bird Conservancy. And you also worked in land management with the Nature Conservancy for more than 11 years. So you are not just a wildlife artist. You are interested in wildlife conservation and habitat preservation.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
He's the real deal.
Let's hear a brief interview segment. And again, I recorded five of these with artists who are on display at the Birds and Art exhibit. Thursday night at their kickoff celebration, Guy Koliak is a wildlife artist who's contributed to Birds and Art in each of its 40 years. He's a New Yorker who currently lives in Florida. And in addition to his paintings of birds, Koliak has gained renown as a big game artist. He's painted large mammals in Africa and Alaska. His contribution to this year's show is an oil painting of two canvasback ducks entitled Windy Surf.
One reason they have it is they treat the artists with respect. No art show in the country has ever treated artists the way these people do. And when I first came here, I met Alice and John Forrester. Alice Forrester is probably the loveliest, most gracious woman I've ever met. She was just an incredible person. And that permeated through the whole building. And there isn't an artist alive that doesn't die to get into this show.
What do you find inspiring? What inspires you to paint?
When you grow up in the concrete jungles of New York and you get down to the barrier beaches of Long Island, or you get into the woods in the West, or you go to Alaska, and it's going into the local woods that made me want to go to the Rockies and to Alaska and to Africa. It's like a cathedral. It really is. I was raised going to church, and it did a lot for me, but right now I don't feel closer to God anymore in church. Much more do I in the forest.
Tell me about the piece that's on exhibit today.
The ocean one?
Right.
Well, that's, curiously enough, that's a barrier beach on Long Island, and I used to go down there birding and walking in the wintertime when there's nobody there and it's cold as hell, but if you just put clothes on, and you're down there all by yourself, and you see the ocean and the birds.
Is there a nexus, a connection between artwork, particularly the kind of artwork that you do, and environmental preservation?
Absolutely. I mean, if we keep spreading out and exchanging rivers and forests for concrete and glass, the animals in the rivers and forests aren't going to live in concrete and glass. So that what's happening is the population is encroaching more and more, both in Africa and right here in the States. When I was a kid, the first time I went to Fort Worth, it was a long, dusty ride to Dallas. Now they're practically the same city. and it, you don't have the animals growing there that used to. So if you like wildlife, if you like the outdoors, if you like nature, it's imperative that we try to preserve it.
That's Guy Koliak, one of the artists on display at the 40th Annual Birds in Art exhibit, if you just joined us. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We have Kathy Kelsey Foley, who is the museum director, and also Walter Mattia with us, who's a sculptor. He lives in Maryland, and he is one of the artists on display at the exhibit. We'd like to hear from you, too. Give us a call if you're impressed with what the Woodson Museum is doing, if you've been to the Birds and Art exhibit, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Walter Mattia, your reaction to what you just heard from Guy Koliak.
I've known Guy for as long as I've been doing this, and he got it exactly right. There is really no place any of the people who practice our form of art would rather be than in Wausau in September. He also mentioned the families, or he mentioned particularly Alice and John Forrester, and just what a wonderful influence and what great just vision they had for this show, and it kind of permeated from them to all of the people who were invited to the show to be part of this sort of very gracious and very giving environment. I mean, most of the art shows you go to are fairly intensively, they're not that fun. I mean, they're our place of business. We're there to make a living. We're there to, establish our chops, or whatever you want to put it. Leoki Woodson is, you go there to indulge in the generosity and the wisdom of people that are very good at this. And I think that generosity really flowed from Alice and John for 40 years.
I think, Walter, thank you. I think that, of course, we take very seriously our role as an art museum. Museums are in the business of exhibiting, collecting, preserving, educating, not selling art. So I think, as we've talked many times, that does change the tone, because the competition, if you will, comes with getting into the exhibition. Once artists are in the exhibition, we celebrate you all during that opening weekend. So I think I hope there is no competition among those artists. It is unquestionable that the grace and hospitality comes from Mrs. Forrester, and I personally was privileged, as many of my coworkers, Jane, Sherry, Andy, that we benefited from knowing her and working side by side in things that maybe are not obvious, like arranging tables at lunch and dinner. She took great care in doing that. But I think the real recognition is the visionary piece, the fact that in the late 1960s, Mrs. Forrester and her two sisters wanted to do something in memory of their mother, and they used their philanthropy and really their privilege to create an art museum for this region. Where we've come over those more than 40 years, I don't think they possibly could have imagined. And of course, that's gratifying for all of us that that we could take that vision and grow it significantly.
Let's move on to another artist. And I will mention also that Guy Koliak makes his living to a significant degree by doing paintings of big game animals, often for hunters, because if you want to preserve habitat, it doesn't mean you're anti-hunting.
That's right.
And Walter, you do sculptures of hunting dogs. But let's move on to Andrea Rich. She's been a regular at the Birds and Art Exhibit for the past 30 years. She's a resident of Santa Cruz, California, although she grew up in Wisconsin. Her contribution this year is a woodcut of long-eared owls, and she says the hot, dry climate in the Central Valley and its lack of trees provided the inspiration and the background for her work.
My piece in this exhibition is a long-eared owl. And there's a couple of fledglings in a tree, and I saw them at the Mercy Hot Springs out in California. And the Mercy Hot Springs is kind of central California. It's hot, it's dry, and there aren't very many trees. And the tree outside this Mercy Hot Springs was filled with long-eared owls. There were about 14, 15 of them in the one tree, so a real treat to see them.
Are you a bird watcher?
I am a bird watcher, although I'm not a professional bird watcher. So there are a lot of them. If you ask me what kind of sparrow that is, I won't know. But I watch them a lot anyway. I know the common species. I was always interested in wildlife. I thought I would be doing more mammals. But as time goes on, you know, once you've done a buffalo, you know, it's a big square block kind of every way you look at it, whereas the birds are very colorful and they're always, every posture is different, and every time you look at them, they're in a different pose. You can move them around the composition. So they've really grown on me over the years.
What do you think of this exhibit as something that happens every year in Little Wausau, Wisconsin, and they've been able to keep this thing going for 40 years now?
You know, Wausau, the Woodson Museum, it's an amazing museum. It's a beautiful museum. Wausau is a beautiful town. It draws people from all over the world. They do something here that you really don't see anywhere else. The museum gathers all the artists together. We spend a weekend together. It's like a family reunion almost every year. It's a real highlight of my year. I always look forward to it.
Santa Cruz is your home.
It is now, but I grew up in Waukesha in Wisconsin. I've been in California for 40 years.
Yeah. What do you make of what's going on in California right now with the drought, with the reservoirs drying up?
We're having a tough time out there. It is hot, 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 and very dry. We're in our fourth year of drought. A lot of fires this year. We have to completely rethink our water use, and this drought has forced that. You know, everybody thinks about water out by us. You know, we're all paying attention.
Well, the Pacific Ocean is unusually warm, too.
That's
El Nino. You know, climate change appears to be happening.
Oh, yeah, I don't think any of us doubt it. You know, we've had a lot of 80-degree weather. I live in Santa Cruz on the Monterey Bay, which usually our summers are foggy till about 2, and then it warms up in the afternoon. There's been no fog this summer, and we've had temperatures in the 80s and 90s almost unheard of by us. So I don't think any of us are doubters.
Andrea Rich, who finds her inspiration in the hot, dry climate of the Central Valley of California, the long-eared owls all roosting in a single tree. She says climate change is making that heat and the dryness unbearable. It makes you wonder if she'll be able to find many long-eared owls in the region in the future, Walter Mattia.
I hesitate to say because I really don't know. I mean, I am a believer. I think that certainly there is climate change happening. Causation and what you do about it are a little less obvious to me, but it has certainly affected sort of conservation policy of the different organizations that I'm familiar with, that I work with, and that, you know, we're increasingly thinking about, well, you know, here's where these things are now. Do we need to also be thinking about where they might have to migrate to in your conservation planning? And so sort of preserve design issues are getting much more complicated. And they're getting much more complicated very quickly for things like shore nesting birds and mountain endemics, things that are restricted to mountaintop things.
Our guests are Walter Mattia. He's a contributing artist for the Woodson Art Museum's Birds and Art Exhibit, also the director of that museum, Kathy Kelsey Foley. When we come back, we'll talk with another contributing artist who does sculpture and charcoal drawings. She's fascinated by ravens and crows. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this short break. And here's Joni Mitchell singing about a black crow flying.
He's black as the highway that's leading me. Now he's that black crow flying in a blue sky.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs, including Steepenbrew, Marcus Center for the Performing Arts, and The Bold Company. Play a role in the success of WPR. Become a business sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy, Stevens Point, with a focus on renewable energy system design and installation, including solar, wood, and deep energy retrofits to existing buildings. NorthwindRE.com.
The white bird dreams of the aspen tree with the dying leaves turning gold, but the white bird just sits in the cage growing old. White bird must fly or she will die.
Well, if you grew up in the 60s, you'll recognize that song by It's a Beautiful Day. We are singing not just about white birds and talking about white birds, but we're talking about black birds. And one of the people at the Birds and Art exhibit is a charcoal artist and sculptor who lives in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Her name is Karen Bondarchuk, and she is in her seventh year now as a contributor to Birds and Art. She's particularly fond of black birds, of crows and ravens. Now, she did a sculpture of a crow that was made completely out of old tire fragments that she found on the road. Her contribution this year is a charcoal on paper depiction of a raven in a winter storm, and it is entitled Tempest.
It's one of the pinnacles of bird art in the world. It really captures the breadth of avian art. And what I appreciate about what they do here is that range, that breadth. They're really looking at bird art from every aspect.
What medium do you work in?
I typically work in charcoal, and that's been most of the work that I've shown in Birds and Art has been charcoal on paper. Although the first year that I exhibited in Birds and Art, I actually had a sculpture that was created out of scraps of tires that I collect on the sides of the highway. So that was...
Tell me about that piece.
Well, it's called Corvus Deflatus, and it was a human scale, so 5 feet, 8 inches long. And I'm really interested in the idea of indigenous material in Michigan. And scraps of tire are really very much a part of the presence on the sides of the highways there. And with the automobile industry, when I made the piece, it was really in turmoil. And so it was kind of an homage to that industry, that dying industry at the time. And so it was this, you know, very large crow. And really reminded me a lot of when I drive down the road and I see an animal on the side of the road, or if I see it in the distance, I sometimes confuse a dead tire, a dead animal. So that was really the genesis of the piece. So.
Tell me about the piece that you've got on exhibit today.
Well, it's a raven, and it's called Tempest, and it's a large kind of moody charcoal, mainly inspired by the horrific winters we've been having in Michigan.
You've got a crow made out of tires and a charcoal drawing of a raven. What do you find inspirational about crows and ravens, these black birds?
Well, it's mainly their intelligence. They are some of the smartest creatures around us. They actually, if you look into some of the studies that scientists are doing now and biologists, they're discovering that these birds are actually tool users, amazingly intelligent creatures. They're able to sometimes second-guess what humans are doing and respond to that. We respond in kind. They respond to that. It's like this coevolution. And it was John Marsloff who talked about this idea of coevolution that happens with these birds and us. And I see their behavior as being really close to our behavior. They're intelligent, they're annoying, they're gregarious. They have all of the qualities that humans have in a slightly different package. So, they really represent, for me, that Darwinian lineage. There's a real straight line for me between us and them. It's part of the big family.
You see a connection between your artwork and environmental preservation?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and crows and ravens are really interesting because they are scavengers, they're opportunistic, and so they're able to adapt to pretty much anything that's going on. And I see us doing pretty much the same right now with, you know, climate change going on. Humans are, you know, we're scrambling trying to adapt to what's going on around us. But, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Karen Bondarchuk, one of the exhibitors at the Birds and Art exhibit. Walter Mattia, what do you make of her comments on the intelligence of ravens and crows and the idea of coevolution, that these birds are very much like people and evolved alongside us?
I suspect she's right. What a biologist would say is they have a wide ecological amplitude, which is to say they figure stuff out. Crows more than ravens. Ravens are a little more tied to different habitat types. But when I was growing up in the East, we never saw ravens, and now we see them all the time. They're figuring out how to live with us. The wonderful thing about Karen's work is that she has concentrated, not exclusively. I mean, she has a wonderful range of creativity and depth within her work. But over the last couple of years, she's done a lot of different ravens and crows. And in fact, as a sort of homage to her mother, she did a Crow of the Day series where every day for a year she did a small drawing of a crow. And she's got these all together, and to look at them is to sort of see how wonderful it is to get so familiar with a subject that all of your energy can go into your thoughts about them, not worrying about how to actually draw them. It's sort of the ultimate holy grail of what all of us work toward when we're working with any of these subjects, to just sort of forget worrying about the details of them and just think about what do we want to say about them. And she has accomplished some wonderful things.
And Kathy, she describes her sculpture of a crow using pieces of old tires found on the highway. That kind of creativity is something we've come to expect at Birds and Art.
Well, I think that's true. Karen is also, I think, maybe a breed apart in that she is also an educator at the college level. And that there's that nurturer side of her, Walt. Do you agree that she's a consummate not just artist but also teacher, nurturer? She was in residence at the Woodson 2 years ago and did fabulous work with school groups and with adults in workshop setting. That many artists do that quite well, but not all artists do that well.
Well, to talk about the creativity.
You know, the thing about Karen is that because she is trying to impart this knowledge, particularly to college students, she's had to really think about how to articulate what she is doing and why. And a lot of us, truthfully, at the highest levels of this, most of the people that are in these shows are pretty darn smart. But the ability to really articulate what you're doing, she is
heads above,
much smarter. Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
And you know,
she
this
is raven-like.
Raven-like.
And this year, Kathy, you've got a piece by Chris Maynard. It's a delicate bird surrounded by scattering insects, all meticulously carved from a feather. So that kind of creativity.
Yes.
Continues. Now, let's move on to Paul Reimer. He's a sculptor who lives in Maryland. He's a bird watcher and waterfowl hunter who's active in conservation organizations. His contribution this year is a sculpture of a roadrunner and a lizard called Hide and Seek.
I have a roadrunner that's on a piece of marble, and in a little nook there's a lizard as if it's hiding from the roadrunner. It's called Hide and Seek.
Do you find birds inspirational?
Yeah, I find birds inspirational. I love all manner of birds. I'm an avid waterfowl hunter, but I'm an avid bird watcher, and I did bird taxidermy for the Smithsonian, so I sculpt birds, I draw birds. I love birds. Birds are great. I like them because, you know, if you want to go to the park and you might see an elk or a deer or something like that, but you can see birds anywhere. You can go to the city and watch birds doing natural things. Birds are everywhere in our lives, and they're that connection that we have to nature that we can see anywhere, which I really like.
The connection to nature, do you see a connection between people who do wildlife art and efforts to preserve the environment and the habitat that the wildlife depend on?
I do see that. I mean, I know a lot of people who are wildlife artists are very active in conservation, and I certainly have my things that I do with that. But I also think that people who are artists are just engaged, and so that they're more present to that sort of thing, and whether they're wildlife artists or you know, figurative painters or something like that, they're going to be connected to what's going on around them, because if you're an artist, you're hopefully paying attention to what's going on around you. So maybe a figurative artist is involved in, you know, community efforts somewhere else doing mm-hmm. things like that. So conservation issues, you know, obviously would speak to people who are doing wildlife.
What do you think of the exhibit? It's the 40th anniversary of this Birds and Art exhibit here in Little Wausau, Wisconsin. What do you think of that?
Well, for wildlife artists, Wausau is one of the biggest cities on the map, you know, because of the Woodson and what they've done for our genre. Every year it seems to be a little better, and I just consider myself lucky to actually be part of that exhibition because there's so many incredible pieces here. It's a beautiful exhibition. I'm just thrilled to be here and just proud to be part of it.
That's sculptor Paul Reimer and Walter Mattia. You and Paul have two things in common. You're both sculptors. You both live in Maryland.
We got more than that in common, but believe it or not, we both started our worlds as museum taxidermists. I worked at the Natural History Museum in Cleveland for 7 years, and Paul was the taxidermist for the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. for 25 or 30 years. And so I think in some ways we both do come at this in some ways, perhaps overly anatomically to start. You know, we both have spent our lives trying to figure out how to get these things right. And I think we're both maturing out of the rightness part of it and trying to figure out, well, but why are we doing it? I think most artists go through that same evolution of sort of passing from just worried about your hand skills to worried about your head skills.
Our guests are Walter Mattia. He's a contributing artist at the Birds and Art exhibit, and Kathy Kelsey Foley, Woodson Art Museum director. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. When we come back, we'll hear from a Milwaukee artist who will talk about the birdwatching opportunities in our state and the special way of thinking he finds in Wisconsin artists. Here's Paul McCartney.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take the broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You're only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black night.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter Construction play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor.
As we listen to Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes with their version of Buffy St. Marie's Up Where We Belong, where the eagle flies, we're talking about eagles, owls, prairie chickens, herons, cranes, ducks, roadrunners, crows, ravens, and songbirds. The 40th annual Birds and Art exhibit, which is now underway at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests are Kathy Kelsey Foley, Woodson Art Museum director, and contributing artist Walter Mattia. Now, we have also been listening to interviews that we did with a number of the artists who are on display. Don Rombaut is one of them. He's a Milwaukee artist who's been contributing to Birds and Art for 15 years. His contribution this year is a wall sculpture called Wings When You Fall. It's a sculpture of two barn swallows,
and an abstract depiction of their flight pattern. Now, we caught up with him in the gallery where he was admiring a watercolor by English artist Darren Woodhead, and it is a watercolor that is entitled An Arrival of Field Fare Among the Haws.
Spend a little time with that one.
Which painting is this?
This one right here.
What do you find interesting about it?
You know, the spontaneity and honesty in the painting is it's not overworked. It's incredibly fresh. It's incredibly, it's confidently done. And it's the kind of work I love, and you see a lot of it here at the show. It's Darren Woodhead. He knows his birds. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to handle his medium. No preliminary drawing involved in this, apparently. And it's just, you know, an incredibly well-composed.
It's just watercolor, and it looks like it's spontaneous.
It's very, it's fresh and confident. And that's what I love about this show is it's a lot of artists that really know their stuff. And this particular exhibit, I think, is off the charts. I mean, it's always an amazing show every year. This one, there's, I don't know, something about it. There's a freshness to it. It's an amazing year.
Tell me about the piece that you've got on exhibit this year.
A pair of barn swallows. It's a wall sculpture. It's basically a frame hanging on the wall with a kind of abstract element within it that's meant to describe the flight pattern of the swallows. And then the swallows are mounted a little further out on the wall, you know, as they've sort of broken out of the confines of the frame.
Do you find birds and wildlife inspirational? Is this something that you portray a lot in your work?
Probably 90% of my work are birds, you know, based on birds, either you know, abstract work that has a bird theme to it or more literal actual representation of specific species of birds.
You a bird watcher?
A bit, yeah. You know, where I am in Milwaukee, about a mile in from Lake Michigan, so we're right on the migratory route there. You know, get loads of raptors in the fall, all kinds of songbirds in the spring. I think we all care deeply about the birds and the environment, and we value these things and want to see them preserved.
40 years for this exhibit, what do you find inspirational?
This is, I think, my 15th year in the show. I started doing it in the late 90s, so I've seen the show grow over the years. It's gotten more diverse, a lot more contemporary work in the show. And like I said, there's something about this year in particular, there's a freshness.
You must be in touch and contact with a much broader arts community in the state of Wisconsin. Is there something that distinguishes artists who work in this particular state?
You know, that's a tough call. I know there's kind of an identity that comes with Wisconsin and Milwaukee, but Wisconsin in general, that I'm not going to try to describe. But I think we've got something really, really special here in the state, and it breeds a special way of thinking.
And Kathy Kelsey Foley, one of Wisconsin's own Don Rombaut, but you attract artists from around the world for Birds and Art.
We do, Glenn. I was fast and furiously writing notes, listening to Don. There was something very special about the weekend, but I also feel there is something very special about the 2015 exhibition. My summer can be summed up in the pages of this catalog in terms of editing and proofreading and just tweaking each and every, mining each and every detail. And to hear artists like Don, Walt, Karen, Andrea talk about how exceptionally they view this year's exhibition, I mean, freshness off the charts, well, that warms my heart. Very exciting. I'm gratified.
Walter Mattia, we're down to our last 15 seconds. You got the last word here.
Oh, boy, I don't want it other than tell everybody that can get to Wisconsin to go. It's a wonderful place. And, you know, we're all really very proud to have been part of it.
Rise up this morning.
We want to thank today's guest, Kathy Kelsey Foley, director of the always free Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum on Franklin Street at the top of the East Hill in Wausau. And you can find out more about the museum and this year's Birds and Art at lywam.org. Thanks also to our guest, sculptor Walter Mataya. You can find out more about his work at mataya.com. Thanks also to exhibiting artists Guy Koliak, Andrea Rich, Karen Bundarczyk, Paul Reimer, and Don Rombot for their contributions to this program. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Dean Kallenbach, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to Amy Beck of the Woodson Art Museum for her assistance. Thanks also to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Chet Atkins, Joni Mitchell, It's a Beautiful Day, Paul McCartney, Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes, and Bob Marley and the Wailers. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.
It's by my doorstep. Sing a sweet song of melodies pure.